Welcome back to Compliments to the Chef. I'm your host, Nancy, and today Bits is out of town, but we have the most incredible, hotly anticipated guest host of the season. I cannot believe that I'm able to utter these words. Welcome back to the pod, season 21 finalist, Savannah Miller.
Ooh, thank you for having me back. I feel like it's an honor and a privilege. I'm super excited to get into it with you.
The privilege is all ours, and I'm so excited because I feel like for those listening, if you didn't get a chance, please listen to our interview with Savannah. I think it was published a couple weeks ago, but that was just an interview of her time on the show. Today, we are being blessed with her inside knowledge, her behind the scenes, on the other side of the camera, understanding of how an episode of Top Chef goes down, and I'm so excited to unpack this episode with you.
It's so different watching it this season. Like, I feel like I had people ask if I would have a different perspective. And I was like, I guess, right? But it's so different. And it's been really fun. But having that like prior knowledge has been really eye-opening, like watching these challenges and these chefs.
That was going to be my first question. Can you like add a little more to that?
Yeah, like, you know, I think it's easy to be a couch troll. And even still, you know, even if you're a chef, it's like, oh, come on, I wouldn't have done that or whatever. And there's a layer of that that rings more true now, just because you're like, hey, like, I know probably what the constraints were even more so than I did before. So like, why would you do A, B, or C? But it's also like you're looking at it through a more empathetic lens. Like, I think it's so much easier to be like, oh, I might have a judgment, but I understand that like, it's probably not your best day anyways.
Yeah. Like, it must be so surreal for the first time being on the other side of it. And, you know, having, as you said, like an understanding of the constraints, not just like what the challenge is, but like, I bet there weren't enough blenders and like that person had to do something different.
Yeah. Or every time they like, I mean, we'll get into it, but like even frying your patties, you know, your beef patty, there's things, right? Like, I know that they discuss it and like it's thought about and the production of the challenge itself, like prior to any filming starting. But like, I don't know. It is interesting. And you never really know what's happening unless you're there. But like, I don't know. It's a different lens, I would say.
Okay. Well, I can't wait to get into it. But before that, we have two leftovers to cover very quickly. No, I didn't win the lottery after putting $4 on the Powerball. So anyone hoping for better production quality of this podcast will have to wait another week. And then secondly,
I'm so sorry.
Thank you. I know. I was devastated. But I feel as though I won the lottery because you are here guest hosting this podcast with me today.
And you know, it was no $4. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like it's a good deal. I feel like, and the lottery, you know, play again.
Play again. I know. Yeah. I am a sucker. I have become a sucker for the lottery. I enter every week now.
Really?
Yeah. Apparently, I need to look into this. My boyfriend was telling me that someone in Texas essentially like – I'm going to need to fact check this and perhaps leftover it for next time. But someone essentially like got all their friends a la like a private equity investment to pool their money. And they bought like $25 million worth of tickets. And then they won the lottery and the return on it was like 10x. So
I feel
that's genius.
It's so genius, but it's kind of like, come on, that's not the, I want to be like, that's not the point.
Exactly. It's not in the spirit of the lotto, but it is easy to game. But all to say, I will play without, you know, pulling $25 million from my friends because who has that lying around? But the last leftover was we had forgotten the name of the market that they went to. They went to the St. Lawrence Market in Toronto, Canada. So that's all for leftovers. So without further ado, Savannah, let's begin. So I can't believe that normally Bits gets to ask this, but I get to do it today. Savannah, what was your amuse-bouche reaction to this episode?
There was a lot going on. To keep it short and sweet, I think my big takeaway is that there was a lot happening in terms of like pivots needing to be there, right? Like a lot of turbulent things happening in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of these chefs handled themselves really gracefully and did a great job. And I think we were shown that some of them didn't. And I think that stood out to me.
Okay. I'm very excited to unpack that, the latter part of what you just said. I think like for me, it was really interesting to see a new quickfire format with the like, and then you get to let your dough rise for an hour and then come back. That to me felt like a really, it didn't feel like a quickfire. It felt actually quite long, but I don't know what it must have felt like in the moment. But all to say, I think that like this was a fun episode because we got these two, like we're sort of out of the like maple syrup poutine of it all and into like some really interesting, challenging cooking. Yeah. And I think it forced the chefs, I mean, we can dive right into the quickfire, but I think it forced the chefs for the most part to do things that are like really not in their wheelhouse, which is really fun to watch as a viewer.
Making people make dough just like across the board, just to be like, okay, episode three, everyone's making a dough. And and also I think a lot of people probably feel that way about like the timing and it didn't feel like a true quickfire, which I agree. But like the other side of the coin for me was you can't ask them to do that without that time. And so, and it's like, I can respect that, like, I hate when their task was something that's impossible, right? Because it's like the judges want good food and we want to watch people succeed. And I think the extra time was necessary. And in general, I just think like throwing something like a dough, even if you give them that time, is like really a big task for, especially for a quick fire and on the third quick fire. Like, it's a lot.
It's a lot. It's really hard. And so what did you like make of the way that the challenge was presented? Did you, you know, feel like you were drawn to anyone's performance in this challenge?
I mean, hindsight's 20/20, right? I'm like, Katiana all the way. I knew from day one. but I do, I will say she is like super, I think she, like my draft pick this year, she was my first one. So I stoked about that. But like, as far as people sticking out, I just think that you had, you saw a lot of people having to like go off recipe or, I mean, they don't really even have a recipe, right? But like whatever their intention was, they're having to just like add and play. In general, watching that was super interesting across the board. And like the way it went for some people, it was great. And some people it was like a disaster and like, you know, it crumbly or wet. And I just think across the board, it was interesting as far as flavors go, or maybe names, Krabby Patty, like
I know
so stuck out to me. Yeah. I just, I love like the personalities and everyone's like, I think really shining through even in these quick fires, even this early on, like I can tell who these chefs are, or at least I think I can.
Yeah. Well, okay. So let's talk a little about that early. I mean, there are what, 13 chefs in there right now. Like that's a ton of people. What is it like to present food like number 10 of 13? How does that work?
I think, so as far as like who goes in what order, they're typically, you know, wherever you go to work and it's like on a table, you know, they'll start, if they're starting in this back corner, it will go clockwise or counterclockwise. But you never really know if they're going to start at the back corner on the left side, or maybe they'll start front right. So there's no guarantee. I will say that like, if there's ever anything that's super time sensitive, like a frozen element, not applicable to this one, they take that into account, which is nice. But for sure, especially when it's like, we're going to give you an ingredient and you guys are all going to make a ton of different food, but you're going to highlight this one thing, a beef patty, like making a beef patty and having 13 of those back to back to back. I feel like we'd get tiring as a judge. So I really wouldn't want to go. I wouldn't want to go last. I don't think.
I know. Do they take notes, the judges?
I'm sure mental, right? But never, like they're not actually scribbling. No.
That's incredible that they have the ability to distinguish between 13 dishes from memory, or maybe they don't. And it's just sort of like recency bias.
I think it's more of, that's why playing the game, it's such a balance of, I feel like I use the word balance talking about this show lately. And it's because I'm realizing, and maybe it's just watching it this season, because I didn't have this exact perspective before. Like balance is key, right? So it's what risks are okay to take, but also like when they're doing these things and they know that there's going to be 13 beef patties or whatever patties they're going to have, I think you have to be, you have to stand out. Yeah. And hopefully that's not for a negative reason, right? But like whether it's a really cool ingredient or, you know, you're going kind of last or something, you're going to make it really different this way, or you're going to make it a different color, or you're going to plate it different.
Yeah.
You have to do things like that.
Interesting. I love that perspective. So speaking of people who did things differently, I want to get into some of these dishes. We should in general cover top, bottom, but, you know, anyone else who stood out. The first person I want to talk about who I think did the most distinctive thing was Shuai, who did his like scallion pancake with what did he have? Malay curry and chicken. Talk to me about, and maybe you know this like from having been there, the rules or whatever, but like he started his filling during the dough part of the exercise. I was amazed that he was allowed to do that.
I'm sure that because you have to, every time you get a challenge and we see like, okay, here are the rules. Like, how do they know the intricacy of those rules, right? Like, how do they know, you know, there it's so serious and there's documentation for everything because at the end of the day, the prize is so grand. Right. And so you have to imagine this is what actually happens, right? They say, okay, go. And then typically there will be a small pause. Where they know what the challenge is and they have to all agree that they understand the rules, which is typically going to be like a production person coming in and just saying, okay, you guys, like Kristen told you what's going on. Are there any questions? We're going to just outline it one more time. And then everyone says like, I understand. And that's how they keep things fair and safe. And that way you can't be like later, well, I didn't know, or blah, blah, blah. They didn't, you know, once you start, you start. And I'm positive that if someone's thinking about it, you know, they're going to be like, hey, if I can get my filling done, is it okay if I start? And I'm sure they're like, yeah, if you can, go ahead.
Go ahead. But, be my guest.
So everything's different, right? There might have been a challenge where they would have been like, no, you only have access to these things for the first 15 minutes. So unless your filling is flour and butter and whatever, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about the dish itself. What did you think of his scallion pancake hand pie?
I think it's kind of brilliant. Like, I feel like if you want to stand out, you take this dish that is essentially, you know, it's a hand pie. So it's a laminated type dough, or it's, you know, it's flour, it's butter, I think pie dough, whatever. And then you can just translate that to so many different cuisines and so many different backgrounds. And for someone like Shuai, you know, who is, again, like, really POV forward. Like, I feel like I can tell where these chefs are coming from or what they want to put out. That's a really smart move. And it's going to, they're going to remember that as long as you're playing within the realm of the rules. And like, it's not too like the open faced, you know what I mean? Certain things, I think there's debate and it's all up to them at the end of the day. So I think it's pretty cool, but I will say one thing. You know how you guys always have a word? I'm a fan of the show.
Oh my gosh, you're so sweet.
You guys always say like, you know, like, oh, they're going to do agua chile or something. Like,
yeah, I have some questions for you about that.
I think scallion pancake might be up there already.
Wait, oh my gosh. I added scallion pancake to the counter. Yay! I was going to make a big announcement, but Savannah, you've already organically figured this out. Huge.
Okay.
I think we've had 3 scallion pancakes in 3 episodes.
It's a lot. Yeah. And sorry to take the buzz away, but I realized that and I thought about you guys first. I was like, need to add it to the list.
Oh my gosh. Savannah, this is the nicest thing anyone could have ever said to me. Because I was like, I'm seeing a lot of, I need to go back and double check, but we've seen at least 3, maybe 4 if my memory serves.
Yeah.
It's wild how much we're getting.
It's kind of it's not like, I love making scallion pancakes. If I'm going to like really try, I've never put it on a menu where it's like, oh, I think I make the best scallion pancake, you know, like it's more of like, oh, it's fun. And it's like a brunch thing,
right?
Or it's whatever. I don't think it's easy. And I don't think it's easy to make like a really, really good one. So I'm impressed that people are like doing that in general.
Thank you for adding this color, because I grew up going to gym sum all the time. Scallion pancake was always mandatory. Yeah. And I don't know if it's easier or hard. I have no sense of if this is something that's just like anyone can whip up. But is it technically challenging?
I do think that anyone can whip it up, right? Okay. Like, I think that it's like, you know, typically, the way I do it, I make a dough, and then, you know, I'm rolling it out, and you're like layering it, and you kind of roll it like, I've done it like a cinnamon roll almost, mm-hmm. like you roll it, and then snake it. Well, yeah. So you have the scallions. That's how you laminate them within the dough. Mm-hmm. Someone's going to watch this and be like, what? She's just not a scallion pancake. But, you know, you roll it up, you roll the scallions in. So that kind of laminates it, gives you the layers. And then you take that round and then you kind of snake it, coil it up. And then once you have like this, you know, whatever, I would like roll it again. And so you're getting these layers and then you're punching them out or whatever. Or mm-hmm. some people will literally do it more like a cinnamon roll and roll it out and then cut it. And, but you're basically like doing that and then flattening it again and doing yeah. that and flattening it. So I think everyone can do it, but I think there's certain techniques that make it really good. So if you're going to yeah. do it on Top Chef, I'm hoping that they're like excellent scallion pancakes.
Oh my gosh. Thank you for adding all of that detail. I'm obsessed. So, okay. Another person that you mentioned that I want to talk about, cause she was on the top, is Katiana. Mm-hmm. So Katiana made a sweet potato, bacon, kimchi, toasted nori, and sesame. Wow. A lot yeah. going on here. What did you think of this preparation?
So her dish, I feel like Katiana's, the way it was described, just like reading that on a menu, I would order it immediately. It's like not just buzzwords, but like it sounds delicious. It mm-hmm. looked delicious. And I feel like I can smell it. Like when I think about like sesame in that dough, it's not only smart, but it's like, that's the type of stuff that I'm talking about, like standing out when you're having that many of that thing. Yep. When you bite that, that's like a sensory experience that you're going to remember. You know, you're going to remember hers out of everyone's. So I thought that yeah. was really good. Yeah.
So clever. And then, okay, just rounding it out. So the last person we had on the top was Zubair, who made a saltfish and vadovan. What is vadovan?
Like a vadovan curry. I mm-hmm. think it's like a French curry powder.
Oh, delicious.
Yeah, it's like slightly different. I've used it in the restaurant a little bit. I like it with lobster, actually. It's just like I feel like I wish I knew exactly the spices that are different, but it's like a French style curry powder.
Love it. Oh, thank you so much yeah. for that. And yeah, he yeah. excelled. I mean, I'm thinking about it through this lens you're saying of like how to differentiate these things. He had the two sauces, which
yeah.
clearly like played really well off each other and was a memorable moment. Yeah. Wow.
And not a lot of people had sauce.
Yeah, I was amazed. I mean, it sounds yeah. like they were pretty crunched for time, especially with like the fryers and all of that.
Yeah.
But so interesting. So then to round it out, I just want to make sure that we cover off the notable people here. So we had two people on the bottom. We had Cesar's mm-hmm. lamb, Jamaican curry, and strawberry glaze. Unfortunately, his dough fell apart. And then Kat had the same fate with her dough. She made a shrimp and banana filling. Is shrimp and banana a common combination?
I've never heard of shrimp and banana. But okay. also the strawberry kind of threw me too. Like,
right?
Both of these were... I'm intrigued, right? Like it's one of those things where if they were on the top, I probably would be like, yeah, strawberry. You know what I mean? But like when it works out this way, I'm like, and I think that sounds weird. But yeah, it threw me off a little bit.
Yeah. It's super interesting how like just the tiniest difference can be like the difference between top and bottom of the challenge.
Yeah.
I'm looking at what everyone made. I mean, all of these sounded so good. I thought Vincent's chopped cheese patty was pretty clever.
It's pretty smart. Little highbrow, lowbrow, or, you know, it's like the yep. New York vibe it gives me of like his pedigree and then doing that side by side. I think it makes me excited for like what his food will be like to come because he kind of like broke out of that. To do that and yeah. that dessert. In the same episode.
I do kind of feel like a lot of 11 Madison Park alumni like love doing this sort of like New York staple, but in the very high-end EMP way. Like this, there's a new pizza place in New York City by like some EMP alums. And I think like there was a donut shop a couple years ago. Like I feel as though it's a common trend. Sense. Yeah.
It's like when we had the hot dog challenge. You know what? I feel like I keep wanting to be like in our season. And I'm like, Savannah, no, don't please. Do that. And I'm like, well, it's kind of the point.
No, we yeah, want to know. I
keep the internal battle. I'm like, it's not about you anymore. But so when we did the sausage fest or whatever, it was a cheese fest. Sorry. When we did the sausage race, Kevin and Manny are like, yeah, sausage fest. Danny had the hot dog. And I remember that, like, you know, you could choose what you got, but you didn't know which order you were going to go in. And mm-hmm. I just did not want the hot dog because I thought, like, worst thing I could do is like have to like cook a dish with hot dogs. Like, I make fried rice at 2 a.m., you know, but like Danny really wanted the hot dog because he's from New York. And he's like, no, I'm going to give him a hot dog.
Okay, but I think you're underplaying your hand because didn't you pick the canned corned beef in a challenge? Am I remembering this correctly?
I did. So that was a quick fire. That was the meat raffle.
Right.
I love how it's like sausage race, meat raffle. Fish boil. God. But so for the sausage race, I did Polish sausage. And I was like mm-hmm. dead. That was one of those where if you don't have a lot of confidence going into it, I think you can get really grabby and like selfish and like, I have to do this. You know, it's right. the only thing I can do. I don't know how to cook anything else. And I think that was my tunnel vision, like going into that specific one. So I was in the bottom, but it was not the meat raffle. It was different.
Got it. Okay. Noted.
Anyways, I digress, but hi. Yeah. New York boys.
New York boys love their New York like yeah. fixations. Oh my gosh. Well, okay. Something that I want to mention, but put a pin in to discuss later on because it will become more apparent is, so Paula did a spiced lamb patty with an Ecuadorian sauce. And I think something okay. that I'd love to like talk to you about and understand as we continue to go through the episode is like, and something that people always yap about on Reddit is like people who, or there are essentially two ways to approach a challenge, or sort of like carte blanche and like you make a dish that you've made for the first time, or like you use it to highlight something that's in your wheelhouse or highlight something that shows like you as a chef. And I think that Paula, we've seen a few times, and this will transition us into the elimination challenge. We've seen a few times say like, you know, this is a traditional Ecuadorian dish or a Peruvian dish. She's like really highlighting, I think, like where she's from and the types of flavors that she's used to. And I'm curious, yeah. like your thoughts on that as a strategy, as opposed to just like inventing new things based on the challenge at hand.
I mean, for sure. Like if you have that really strong point of view that like, and it's unique, right? Like I can't think of any, I'm not saying there aren't, but I can't think of any other like Ecuadorian, like female Top Chef contestants. Mm-hmm. Right.
We can yeah. double check and on so, that. We can double check.
Right. Yeah. Your leftovers next week will be like, we checked. But so I think that like, you have to stand out. So it comes back to that where you have to put your best foot forward. Like why it's not just like do the best, blah, blah, blah. It's why is yours the best? And that has to do with your experience as a chef and where you're from. But yeah. like someone who I thought did a really good job of that in our season was Rossica.
Yeah.
You know, early on everyone was like, that's her plate. Like she's telling us she's using ingredients and she's, giving us sauces and preparations that might be unheard of to a lot of people, especially people watching. And so mm-hmm. she resonates like with people watching and the judges, because you just know like, oh man, she's going to take this and really give it her all as far as like, we're going to see her on the plate. And I just think that Paula is not as successful yet. Mm-hmm. I love that she's doing it. I think it's yeah. a good idea. And I don't really know if it's like, I would change my approach, because I just think it's like nerves, maybe. I don't know. I think she's got a lot of good stuff, and maybe there's a misunderstanding too, right? Like if I think we'll get into it, but like if we don't know that something is supposed to be brothier or eaten right. a certain way, etc., like I don't know the real answer, but I do think it gets into a gray area of like, well, at the end of the day, like it's still based off their opinion. So maybe I wouldn't do something that's that foreign, or maybe I would, if I'm yeah. going to go that route, I'm going to execute it so well, you're obsessed with it now. So yeah. I don't know.
Interesting. Well, okay. I would love to bring us now into the elimination challenge, because that yes. is a theme that made it all the way through. So the elimination challenge, we have Natalie Spooner, a Canadian Olympic gold medalist in hockey, which was just a delight. And yeah. we have, the chef-testants go behind these mystery cloches. Now, what is going through your head? Like, maybe not so much like which one would you pick, but like when this is presented to you in the Top Chef kitchen, are you just like, I'm going to send it and hope for the best? Or is there any way to get a sense of what's going on there?
I think you send it. For me, I mean, someone else might have a different answer, but for me, I'm not going to like waste energy on like worrying about this part. Like, I believe that they're all fair options, like, because that's what we're doing here, I hope. But like, I would just be like, yeah, I'm going to go for this one. Like, I'm already like a little out of my wits in Canada. So, so we'll see.
I love it. I love it. So the contestants are told that they're going to have to create a cold dish and that they have to incorporate and highlight the mystery ingredient underneath the cloche that they are standing in front of. So those ingredients turned out to be peanut butter, eggs, apples, muffins, licorice, and a biscuit. My gosh.
This was so weird to me. I mean, like in reality, it comes together, but like and I still think overall it's a pretty, I don't know, easy challenge. Like, I think, I mean, like, okay, so you have to make a cold dish. Okay. A lot of people would argue that, like, I think maybe Corwin's the one that said, like, it's hard to get a ton of flavor. It's easy to have like bland cold food. Maybe I'm correct in that, but, I think otherwise, like, you're taking a lot of things out of play. Like, I hope you're not going to have a protein that's undercooked.
Right.
Or, like, you know, unintentionally. I feel like you're taking a lot of stuff out. And even if it kind of forces people into a hole based off their ingredient, like, what? You have to highlight one thing and make it cold. It could be so much worse.
I thought this was I absolutely love that that's your reaction to it. I also was like a bit underwhelmed. I was like, okay, so they're just making – I mean, we knew we were going to see a lot of crudos. We knew we were going to see some ceviches. We knew we'd see an aguachile. Like, it's almost setting everyone up to do the most obvious thing you could do.
It is. I think that it – you know, gosh, it's so interesting. It makes me want to play again because I feel like you just start thinking about it different. Like – I think early me would be like, oh, thank God, you know, like low confidence, a little like, so glad, like we're all just gonna have to do something cold. Like, maybe I would have tried to anyways, but I would have stood out as like not taking a risk. So like, that's great, you know? But nowadays I feel like I look at this challenge and it's like, these are all really talented chefs. And for it to be right off the bat, like you have to do something cold. This for me is about, obviously you have to make that ingredient shine, but like knife work and presentation and like you're taking so many elements out that like the people who succeeded, in my opinion, were the people who did like technique driven things or really precise, like knife work, beautiful, like, I don't know. Obviously flavor forward dishes are always going to win, but like, I do think that when it's like taking away someone's senses, if you can't see, you're going to be able to hear and smell better. So if I'm taking away the whole object of, you don't have to actually like really give me something hot and worry about any of that. Everything else better be perfect.
That is such, I really appreciate that perspective because I like, we always see these raw dishes in quick fires because that's what you have the time to do in a quick fire.
Yeah.
It almost felt as though we should have like switched these challenges this episode. Of course, beef patties, like I understand that the time constraint was small, but I feel like there could have been a way more interesting elimination challenge out of beef patties than there is an elimination challenge out of cold dishes. Or maybe I'm like totally off.
No, I don't think you're totally off. I think that like I maybe the format of like, because I mean, so they made like six of these plates. I'm sorry, maybe it was like six or eight, right? And you had a night cook. Like, it's just, I feel like it's like, take away the night cook or make it like a partner challenge or change the format. Like, I don't care that like the beef patty was quick because I think I honestly would have gotten, I feel like if you want to do the beef patty, you have to do it for a quick fire. I don't know if you can, maybe I'm, okay. I just don't know enough about it, but to me that would have felt like, okay, we're still doing this. Unless it's like, you have to make a beef patty and go and see who can sell the most at a market, and whoever has the most wins. And then, like, I think it's in the details where it seemed just a little, like, I don't know, lackluster in that sense. But I really thought, like, the drama of the episode and this and like the theatrics were really fun, like the ice cream and things like that.
Yes. Okay, so let's get into what they actually made and what they had to cook. So first person up, we have Vinny. Vinny stood behind the cloche for a biscuit. And so he decided to go strawberry shortcake. And what did you think of Vinny's dish? Were you excited, interested?
Yeah, I thought it was gorgeous. Like, that to me is my favorite. Like, I do a lot of savory cooking, but I love making desserts. And I love, what I love about desserts is that, like, you can really be so detailed and precise and make it really pretty. And most of the time, you know, it might be like temperature sensitive, like it's frozen or something, but like, you can like really like take your time and make it gorgeous and walk it out and talk to someone about it. And like, I appreciated all those things about his dish, and I love a strawberry shortcake. I thought it was unique in the way that like you have those nostalgic flavors, but like different textures, and it's totally, it looks different. And the pun of breaking the ice, like, has really stood out to me.
Yeah, it was good. I felt similarly. It's sort of the tweel that he had on it really reminded me of the Buddha dish in season 19 when they did the doppelganger challenge. And I think they did one, it may have been strawberry shortcake, but it was like sort of a berries and cream situation and then a everything bagel.
And those I was going to say dishes. Everything bagel is what I remember. Yeah. Yes.
But the dessert version, it just reminded me of that. And I mean, we've commented on this before, but like, they are clearly cut from similar cloth. It's fun to see.
And those molds are like, I think some people are like, either don't understand it and they're like, wow, look at how did he do that? You know? And other people are like, yeah, I can take a batter and I can put it into a mold as well. But the thing that really stood out to me about his dish is like, I even brought some of those same type of silpats and I did them in a few challenges. And like, it actually, when you're going that fast, it is very precise because you're watching an oven and you're running around doing other things. They're so quick usually to cook. And without like, it's a visual thing, but like, it's so easy for it to not look that perfect. And so even though he had that mold, the fact that there was no like frayed edges, there was no discoloration, like, it really stood out to me that he is well trained.
Yeah, his looked beautiful. Okay, so next up we have Corwin, whose secret ingredient was apple, which I feel like, again, a real layup for a cold dish. But Corwin made scallop and apple aguachile with variations of apple. Now, I need to pause here and ask you, because season 21 famously entered aguachile into the contender of cold fish dishes. Can you explain to me and our adoring fans the difference between an aguachile, a ceviche, and a crudo? This is not a test. Oh, okay. I'm genuinely curious.
Yeah, I'll give you like the most basic answer. So like, crudo is like Italian for raw. So when I hear crudo, like, you wouldn't see something that's like aguachile crudo, right? Like, maybe there's like a not typically. But I feel like crudo just inherently means it's a raw thing. So you can have a bunch of different types of crudo. You're usually going to see it being fish. As far as a ceviche, that means that like, you're not using heat to cook the protein, you're using acid. So that's going to have a high amount of typically like, you know, lime juice or, you know, citrus, and it's going to sit in the marinade for a very specific amount of time. And you're usually going to either like eat it at that moment or take it out and slow it down. But the acid will actually coagulate the proteins and it will cook it and change the texture. And then aguachile, I believe, is just like chili water, right? So it's like, it's less about cooking like the protein. I mean, I feel like I've had aguachiles that give me that ceviche sense, but like, I believe it's just more about spice and that liquid.
Thank you for that. I really appreciate that. Because I'm
always
wondered.
I'm not a big aguachile person, but yeah, I do love a crudo, you know. One of my first jobs was like working at this crudo counter is what we called it. And we did fish, we did meats, we did oysters, we did, you know, plateaus. And So like just that whole, I don't want to say garbage, because I feel like that's the first station you work. But like in this restaurant, it was like this dope station. So like in my heart, I don't hate like the idea of people coming up and being like, oh, I had to work salad station forever. Like for me, it always means like those types of dishes, and it's fun.
I mean, for me on any menu, like I am a simp for a crudo or a ceviche or an aguachile. It is always the thing that draws my attention. So I do not fault anyone for making them on Top Chef. It's just become this funny thing. But okay, let's talk about Corwin's apple aguachile. The judges said it was well-balanced, ice cold. He played with the apples really well. The heat level was good. And I believe it was Hunter Lewis who said this is a restaurant dish.
Yeah, always a good, like, if they can say, like, wow, under all these constraints, you gave us something that, like, feels like we're just in a restaurant setting, that's obviously everyone's goal, but, like, it doesn't happen as often as you think. It's essentially like saying no notes.
You know? Love that. And actually, speaking of notes, I have a question for you as someone who has cooked in the Top Chef kitchen with the judges present. I'm sure that you get this question all the time. Can you hear them talking about you?
Do you mean – no. I mean, I there's a few different situations in which they would be. But typically, you know, if you're at the judge's table and you feed them something and then you're walking away, and in the show, you know, you might see us like we're still walking off, but like they start talking. And that does happen, but it's very rare that you hear something. And if we did, it's not helpful, right? Like, I think there may have been a few times in which, you know, you walk away and you go to the stew room and you're like, I just heard them say, like, chewy. All I heard was chewy. I just heard the word chewy. And, you know, and then you spiral. And then it turns out that it's like, oh, man, I love that this chewiness of this was so great. So I think that it can happen, but it's rare.
And I guess it's also, now that I think about it, it's happening after you've already executed anything. It's not like it's giving anyone an unfair advantage. It's just adding to like the post, you know, challenge energy.
The anxiety and like
anticipation.
Of the things, that you can't change at that point. Like, I think it's worse when Tom walks around the kitchen when you're prepping and he's like, asks you questions, but that's very intentionally so you hear it, you know? So like, that's all for to build anxiety for that reason. And so I just think anything like that, if we hear it, they probably want us to.
Yeah. Love it. Oh, thank you. So, cause I've just wondered that every season they do it. Also, by the way, you were talking about the theatrics of this episode, the ice skating rink was very cute, but the thing I noticed the most, did you see Gail just walk right onto the ice in her heels? Not a care in the world.
No, it was probably so seamless that I didn't even think about it. I'm going to have to go back and watch that.
Beautiful. The woman, I mean, a true Canadian, like just pranced right onto the ice in high heels, didn't wobble, didn't falter. She just pranced right on there.
I think that would be my, I feel like if I had noticed that, I would have started my amuse-bouche being like, the cooking's fine. Can we please talk about, because I love her. I did see she just got, I don't want to mess with like the timeliness of this, but she just got like a key to the Canadian consulate or something. And I was like, yes,
girl. Give it to her. She is such an ambassador. Yeah. She has brought the Top Chef universe to Canada in a way that no one else could. And I have to give Bits credit because we were talking about the season, like what we were excited about. And Bits was like, I'm excited about the Gail. Like she is the ambassador for this. And it's finally like she deserves this. She really does. She's put in so much time. Like, and she's such a proud
Canadian.
She's taking
them home.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
I love her.
It's her season. I hope that it's not – I don't even want to say this. But, like, I did get a little nervous that it might have been, like, we're going home. You know, like, we're taking Gail to Canada. I don't know. I think Padma leaving really shook me up. I have trust issues. I think that's what it is. I can't imagine, right? Like, she wouldn't leave Tom. But I did worry about that for a moment.
Oh, never. We can't break them up. Okay, but we got to keep moving. So your comment about Corwin's dish being like no notes, unfortunately, we sort of have the opposite experience for Massimo's dish and a little bit for Zubair's dish. So Massimo and Zubair had muffins. they had to, so Massimo made a banana muffin cremeau, which I believe was supposed to be ice cream and then just did not freeze up in time. He made a muffin ganache and a speculoos tuile. Zubair made a king salmon crudo, added to the counter, jalapeno buttermilk broth, and a muffin crumble. I kind of think muffin was the hardest thing to work with of all of these.
I agree. I think if you got peanut butter, I mean, neither people with peanut butter did a dessert. I think if you got peanut butter, I would feel like I had to do a dessert. So that is difficult in that sense, but like not because making a peanut butter dessert is hard. Just because I feel like you'd be backed in. Muffin for sure. Like, you're taking a product that's done, you know, it is different, but it's also like, I do think a really unique point of view for like the inspiration of starting a dish. Like, I kind of loved the direction when I was like listening to Massimo before I like, you know, the end of the episode where it kind of all landed. I think him describing it like a salted muffin. I don't know. He said something that I was like, I want a salted muffin ice cream. Like that sounds good, but not easy. Not easy.
Yes, agreed. And Zubair sort of played it off with his crumble, the butter, the blueberry muffin crumble, which, you know, he got the feedback that the muffin was a bit lost, but he had immunity. So he sort of got away with it. But I still think his dish was fine and like really had no major problems with it. Just maybe didn't adhere to the challenge too much.
It was gorgeous. And it sounded like it was delicious. I feel like, you know, maybe for him it was enough muffin and he didn't think that'd be a problem. I think that that one sneaks up on people. Like, oh, you just didn't do enough of it. Like, I think that's the last thing they think. But definitely, like, I would have been a little bit more excited to see more with immunity, I think. Just, like, a little bit more, like, crazy something. But muffins and salmon crudo, maybe that was his version of that.
Yeah, it could be. Because I also feel like there are a lot of times that, like, someone gets dinged for not following the challenge. I feel as though it's rare that someone on Top Chef, like, this particular show is like, I am intentionally just going to completely eschew the challenge and not pay attention to it and just do what I want to do. For the most part, I feel like there are good intentions. I don't think Zubair was there saying like, I really can't stand this muffin. I'm going to do the least possible thing with it. I agree with you. I don't think that it was like the most interesting dish considering he had immunity. But I, to your point, I bet he was like, yeah, I did it. Like I included this ingredient. What else do you want from me? And he made a good dish.
And when you have people with other mistakes, you know, like that are bigger, it just kind of becomes less of a problem.
Mm-hmm. Yes, 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 yes. So next up, we have the Grapefruit Bunch. We have Kat and Henry. This to me felt like very, pardon the pun, low-hanging fruit for a crudo. But we have grapefruit scallop tartare agua chile from Kat. And then a leche de tigre, which I'm pretty sure is sort of the same thing. Cured salmon grapefruit with grapefruit sorbet. Both of these sounded so yummy.
Yeah, they did. I think that like definitely the apple and grapefruit were pretty, I mean, agreed, like the easier of the bunch, especially lending themselves to cold dishes. Like it kind of makes sense already.
Yep.
I mean, can you imagine? It'd be way harder. It would be harder if you were like make a hot dish with grapefruit. Like it wouldn't be difficult. It wouldn't be impossible, but it's like when you get grapefruit, you're probably going to do something cold to begin with, I would think.
Yep.
But yeah, no, I thought they did great. And I just got over the fact that like I was going to see a lot of like similar things.
Yeah.
Or I thought that early on. But
I feel you. Grapefruit is my favorite citrus. So I was excited to see it have its moment on Top Chef. A lot of people dog on grapefruit for being bitter, but I love it. Okay, next up, we have the licorice group, Tatiana and Cesar. Tatiana made a chilled chicken and licorice soba with cucumber and daikon. Whoa. I want to hear your thoughts on that because I know you have a Japanese cooking background. And soba noodles, I believe, are very integral to Japanese cuisine. And then Cesar did a chilled shrimp salad with licorice tea. These two, I feel like, knocked it out of the park in that they were so creative and took the challenge by the balls, excuse my language, and were just like, I can do this and give you something that isn't a crudo.
Yes. I mean, okay, to make soba noodles, period. Like, is a lot. I mean, it's hard. Like, it's a task. It takes time. I think people can be very judgmental. Like, if you're going to do it, they're like, okay, she must know what she's doing. And you know, just the time it takes and literal muscle. So that was impressive to me. I feel like because they had licorice root, like, I don't know if it made it easier to be creative because you're forced into, it's already like grapefruit is like, there's so many things that come to mind where it might be harder to reinvent the wheel, but licorice root to me, like, I don't know whether it was primed for them or not. I think they crushed it. And I think it's the hardest, one of the hardest ones besides muffin. And they really did, like, they pivoted, like they thought on their toes, you know, she didn't have enough flavor. She didn't have enough flavor. And she's like, I'm going to do this. And it's smart. And she's like, she's using her brain and her experience and her technique to like bring so many layers of flavor.
Yes, I completely agree. I was really impressed by these two. Okay, so then we have the peanut butter bunch. Peanut butter from Paola came as ceviche. Ceviche hippie hoppa, love to say that, with a sablefish and cucumber tartare. Lana made chilled peanut soup with pickled shrimp. Both of these... I mean, I thought that they sounded delicious. It seems like the execution wasn't really there. So this is where I want to like come back to this idea of like Paola is once again showing us like a piece of her culture, which clearly lends itself well. Mm-hmm. I feel like ceviche is a very like Central American dish and like each country has like its own variation. But I'm curious.
Yeah.
The big feedback that she got was that there was the sauce was too much like a broth and there was too much of it. So talk a little bit perhaps about like perhaps like where she went wrong or like what happened in this and your impressions of how she executed this dish.
Like my general opinion is you can focus on some things. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's easier when you're getting that judgment from the, you know, Tom and Kristen and Gail, like, oh, you know, this is how it is when I make it back home or this is how it's supposed to be. That's fine. I think that if it had more flavor, they wouldn't have cared.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not that I think it's anybody like dodging the reality of the situation, but like, we don't know the edit. We don't know everything that was said, but like at the end of the day, did they really care that it was brothy or did they care that they couldn't taste anything because there was so much of something that they didn't enjoy?
Yeah. That's a great point. That is a very well put. Okay. And then bringing up the rear, we have three, not one, but three egg dishes. This was the ingredient that had the most number of people competing against each other. We had Anya, Tristan, and Shwai. So Anya and Shwai made desserts. Anya made a pine needle ice cream with a sea buckthorn cake. Shwai made a sweet corn semifreddo with sweet potato mochi. And then Tristan made, I kind of feel like the dish that stole the show, which was a split deviled egg, dry aged beef tartare with three preparations of egg. Wow. Where do you want to begin here?
Yeah. Oh, I feel like we have to start with the deviled egg, like the shattered deviled, like liquid nitrogen, whatever. Brilliant. I'm still like, what? Like, I think I'm like, what did you do for, you know, like it's really creative. I never would have thought about something like that. I'm not a huge like deviled egg person to begin with, which is crazy because of where I live. Don't tell anybody. don't tell anybody. I think that's really creative. And like to take something that was just smart cooking to me because that formula works, you know, that formula works. Mm-hmm. But if you're going to do something like a beef tartare, what are you going to do to make it, you know, nuanced and new for us? And how are you going to do that in a way that's highlighting an egg? And he did that. So that was like crazy amazing for me. I loved it.
I loved watching him. And like the way that he, in his talking head to camera, was talking about how he came to this idea, it seemed so natural. He's like, well, what cold dishes use an egg? Beef tartare. And it seems so simple, but that the fact that the other two people he was competing against in this round didn't go savory. They went sweet. They went for dessert. Like, it's incredible. It clearly is remarkable that he got to that in the first place. And then he took such an interesting spin on it. And I'm also really in my, like, beef tartare era. So I would have loved to have tried this dish. It sounded so good. And then, okay, so pulling at the end, we have these two desserts. One successful, one not so successful. Shuai made a nice, playful dish. Textures were a bit off, but the flavor of the food was delicious. So let's talk about Anya, because I think that we need to sort of focus here. Anya, like, really struggled on this challenge. I'm curious, like, you were talking at the beginning about, like, you know, people have bad days or this or that. Like, what was your interpretation of her performance? And she felt like she just kept tripping over herself today.
Yeah, like, it's hard to watch because I can imagine, like, the mental state of what's going on. I think it also reminded me of someone, like, she got praise for, like, doing that and, like, putting herself out there and bringing these things from home and knowing how to utilize them and surprising people. And I think that maybe she leaned too far, like, oh, I got good feedback on this, so I'm going to lean on this more. Maybe it had nothing to do with that. Maybe it was like, I feel like this is the best way for me to use the sea buckthorn powder. But I think my biggest takeaway from this whole thing is being able to pivot and not making, like, if it didn't set the first night, you would not catch me making that ice cream and that cake again. I would be finding ways, like, how can I utilize, maybe the cake is trash, right? Like, maybe we just don't use it. But the ice cream, we have to change our game plan here, and you have to make those decisions and stop wasting time. And side note, like, I wouldn't have, I feel like if you're going to bring something and you're going to take the time to choose out of all your options and bring sea buckthorn powder, I would expect a little bit more, like, research into
like technical
ways
knowledge.
I'm going to use it.
Exactly. I think that's a really fair point.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've made it through all the chefs. We come to judges' table. On the top, we have Tristan, Katiana, and Corwin, who I think, like, we in our conversation have identified as, like, really excelling at this task. And we, our winner of the evening is Katiana, who I think totally crushed it and deserved it. Because, like,
I
egg,
love
apple.
This early on, like, doing that.
Yeah. I feel like with between egg and apple, it wasn't, like, the most difficult challenge. I really think of these three, Katiana had the hardest hill to climb, and she crushed it.
Yeah. And I love a win against all odds, you know, like, it with the hardest thing, but also not just, like, doing the best that you can with the hardest thing, like, doing a really difficult task very well with the hardest thing. I love it. And it's really early for someone to get both, like, you know, a quick fire and an elimination. Like, I feel like it's early.
Yeah. She knocked it out of the park this episode. It was fun to see her, like, shine. But unfortunately, on the bottom, we have Anya, Paula, and Massimo. I have a question. More so than most episodes, I feel they were doing a lot of, while we were watching Judges Table, a lot of cuts to the chefs, like, in the wings, essentially. And they were all looking very uncomfortable. What is the experience of being at Judges Table like when you're just watching the judges sort of, like, critique other people?
So I think that, like, it can be a little tragic and awkward, you know, you're standing there, and especially if you don't know your fate yet. So some of it's selfish where it's like, okay, let's go. Like, are if they're in the bottom, then, like, am I in the top? At least I'm safe. Especially if they start with the good people, I feel like I almost never pay attention to their compliments because I'm just sitting there constantly worried that, like, okay, if I'm not in the top, then I must be in the bottom. But whenever, sometimes it goes on really long, you know, like, we've had judges tables that were, like, 3 hours long.
Seriously?
And that's legitimate. I mean, Restaurant Wars, that is, like, you know, going to be the longest one. But I think when you're watching someone, I mean, have you ever, like, been in a class where, like, someone's just getting berated? Like, and not that the teacher is a jerk, you know, and not that, like, it's just you watch someone getting torn apart and, like, you're like, all right, well, I'm glad it's not me.
Yeah. Oh, that's so interesting. That's amazing about Restaurant Wars. Very interesting tidbit. But yeah, I just noticed that more, like, than other episodes. I feel like they were cutting away to the chefs. And I was like, oh, I wonder what it's like standing there. But unfortunately, we see Anya eliminated this episode. I feel as though it was fair based on what they presented. But she was such a strong performer up until this point that it was, like, you know, interesting to see her go so early.
Yeah. It's hard. I like Anya as like a person. Like, not that I don't like Anya as a chef, but like as like just a character and like a sweet person I've enjoyed watching.
Yes. Completely so. Agree. We'll miss her. Yes. Now we have the question that we must ask, which is, would you eat that? Savannah, would you eat Anna's pine cone ice cream and sea buckthorn cake?
I'll try anything once, you know. I feel like I would definitely, and especially whatever things are like really high praise, I honestly am like excited, but like I'm more excited to try the things that didn't go well, because I guess I'm just like, I want to know the dirty details, you know. I want to know how bad was it? Was it, you know, or I would definitely try it. Would you?
Yes. I think there was nothing that like, I mean, with the exception of maybe like the textures were off and like it wasn't a successful dish, there was nothing like super gross to me about this dish or that would put me off from trying it. So I would also eat this dish, but it probably would not be on my top 10 desserts. That said, we have come to our final segment of the episode, Judgy Table, and I'm so excited to hear yours. This is our segment, listeners, where we just sort of get to rant about something for 1 minute. Savannah, I know that you have some things prepared, but I am happy to go first to show you sort of like an example, or let our guests go first. You get to pick.
I would love, you go first. Give me an example and then I can gauge my answer.
Okay. I need to warn you that mine's very silly today. So here we go. Okay, Nancy, your judgy table starts now. Muffins are my least favorite, I think, pastry. I come to this decision not lightly, but muffins, as I get older, are just like too much. It's essentially like a whole cake, but with no icing or frosting. I still don't know the difference between those two things. And like the muffin top is good, yeah, but not good enough to get me to buy the whole muffin. Because it's a huge commitment when you get a muffin. I also find that most muffins are too damn sweet. A blueberry muffin where they have like the sugar crystallized, it's just too much. It's overwhelming and it really sets you back for the whole day. I'd rather have pretty much any sort of pastry other than a muffin. The end.
That was good. That was way under a minute.
Oh, it was 45 seconds. Yeah, you don't need to use the whole time if you don't want. That's fine.
I was practicing. I was like, I'm at 50 seconds. Gosh, I need to
wait, that's so it's funny. Very low stakes. But how do you feel about muffins?
I agree with you. I also just, you know, I feel like if I ever want a muffin, I feel like they're either miniature or they're too big. And and I don't want a dozen normal size muffins, right? Like, I don't know. I think it's not a problem I encounter a lot, but I don't really think about ordering muffins ever or buying muffins. Yeah.
I completely agree. And the other thing I was going to say is that like people refer to scones as like just the top part of the muffin. That description has always pissed me off because it couldn't be further from the truth.
Yeah. It's like a scone's way more of just like a sweet biscuit to me.
Yes, exactly. Like, thank you for understanding.
I don't know. I wouldn't think about – yeah, no, people who are saying that are lying to you. It's not even like close to being similar. I love scones.
I love scones.
Okay, I feel pretty good. I feel ready.
Okay, Savannah, your judgy table starts now.
Okay, I feel like it's a little bit more personal, but my judgy table is about Tom Colicchio. I believe that this, I'm a little anxious watching this season because I think that we've lost some of what I love about Tom. I look at him as a Simon Cowell on the judges table. If, you know, Top Chef was American Idol. I think that we have seen a lot of really good dishes, but across the board, there have been a ton of like little mistakes. And I think Tom's too happy. I think when people come into LCK and then they decide to leave, like before even entering the competition, I think he's being really nice. I think that I want a little bit more of old school Tom. I think that's my rant. It would make the great moments better if we had the bad ones.
Yes, I think that's a really astute point. Tom is really happy this season. And he's just like, oh, everything's good. Everything's fine. I love this.
I feel like it's because he was probably writing a book whenever we were filming last year, and now he's like maybe more relaxed. But no, in general, yeah, I just feel like I feel like Tom's giving out participation awards.
Wow. Yeah. You know, it's so interesting because we, you know, just did our rewatch of season 10, and there are a few episodes in season 10 where Tom is like really laying down the law and is like, you guys cooked bad food today. And it feels like that sort of fire is maybe gone.
Yeah. Like I think last season, if we breathed wrong, it was like, you guys need to shape up. You know, so maybe I'm just taking it personally, but that's what I think I would say.
Well, thank you so much for your contribution, Savannah. And thank you so much for joining me as an incredibly trustworthy co-host today on this episode of Compliments to the Chef. It has been such a pleasure. And just want to give you a moment to promote anything that you're working on, anything that you're doing that you want the people at home to not know about.
Absolutely. Well, thank you again. This is so much fun. I'm loving the new season so far. I think all the chefs are doing great. As far as where you can find me, I'm at Imtempora. You know, I am still working on that dream. I am on Instagram. You can find me at Savvy Sav, SavvySavv. But yeah, just kind of like getting ready for springtime. We're doing a lot of travel and a lot of stuff with the chefs, especially in the next few months. So keep your eyes out. Are your ears peeled and your eyes out, whatever it is.
Ears peeled, eyes out, and, you know, tummy's hungry. Savannah, thank you so much for joining us. Please. And everyone at home, we'll see you next week on Compliments to the Chef.